Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit DXEngineering.com/HamNation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 344 for March 28th, 2018. The Pine Board on 160.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Ham Nation, a show all about ham radio, yes, and things like that. I'm Bob Heil, K9EID, and I'm in Fairview Heights, Illinois, and I'm standing amidst the production area for Heil Sound, where they build all the microphones. I do the design, they build them, and we got a whole bunch of nice people to do that. But talk about nice people. We have a bunch of nice people that are going to bring you some good information tonight. And one of them's way down in the other side of California. How you doing, Gordon West?
All is fine, Bob, and good to see everyone tonight. Sorry I missed last week, but I'm here for the foreseeable future. Back to you, Bob.
Okay. I know you got some good stuff, so we'll be back. And George, how you doing? You got your hands out of one of the transmitters tonight? What are you doing?
Well, I do so far, Bob. I might have to before the night's out. We've got tornado warnings in the area, not right here where I am right now, but there's thunderstorms headed this way. So if you hear a loud banging noise on the roof in a little bit, that would be coming from here. Well, you know, I've been building that tuner for the last couple of weeks there. Actually, I built it in 2013, and we're playing this video again because it's a great project and kind of catch people up on it. I watch a little bit of tonight's program for that, where I'm actually adjusting it, calibrating it, and testing it. And I had forgotten how I did that. So I was, it was kind of interesting. I have forgot all about it. So we'll have that a little bit later in the show tonight. Plus, I got stuff to give away.
All right. You're going to have to call Ted Randall. He'll help you tune that up. He's good at tuning up big transmitters, so that'd be nothing for him. So, Don, how are you doing, buddy? It's really good to see you, and I guess you're doing well down there.
I am.
In the lower.
We're doing great. Of course, Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, is in the chat room that always turns into a sing-along, at least inside my head, which can be a scary place. And speaking of Ted Randall and WTWW, of course, folks all over the country and all over the world are listening to us right now on that big blowtorch in and around Nashville, Tennessee on 5085 and 12.105. The 12.105 has a monster signal into Africa. So, I mean, just an amazing, just a monstrous station. And we're so happy that Amateur Radio Newsline is a part of that. Of course, they play a lot of Bob Heil organ music on there. And the Ham Nation audio is simulcast, and a lot of ham radio stuff and a lot of great country music on WTWW. And if you have anything you would like to tell Ted, ham radio related or otherwise, his email address is very simple. It's email at WTWW.us. Email at WTWW.us. Fire one off, and whatever you've got ham radio related, club news, anything, you just want to say hi. Talk about music, anything, just fire it off to him, and he'll pay close attention and probably get your stuff on the radio, too. He's funny like that. We've got Tamitha Scove coming up via videotape with the solar update and Newsline and a bunch of other stuff, and let's go ahead and get right to it, Bob, shall we?
All right, and I got a little surprise for everybody tonight. Remember this thing? That's the coil out of the pine board. Well, I took it out and I replaced it. Wait till you see what I replaced it with. And we'll be coming up there in just a little bit and we'll tell you all about that. So let's go see what Gordo's got first. He's always got really good stuff. So make it happen, Gordo. It's all yours.
All right. Well, thanks, Bob. And incoming, a lot of things happening this weekend. The Tucson Spring Ham Fest in Tucson, Arizona. That's the Radio Society of Tucson. That's going to be Saturday, March 31. And that's always a good one. So for those of you in Arizona, Tucson. Now, incoming, for those of you around the world, and certainly all of the USA and South America, incoming, the Chinese space station is due to disintegrate on its way into a fiery entry somewhere around the world. Spaceweather.com, Tamitha talks a lot about that. They've got the latest details, but if you see something whiz by this Saturday or Easter Sunday or Monday, that very well could be the Chinese space station on its fiery return to Earth. And speaking of hot things happening, Bob is going to the Fox Theater when all of us are up at Visalia, April 21 and 22. So, Bob, we can't wait to hear that Saturday organ concert, and everybody's invited. Well, tonight we're going to talk about something that all hams have hanging around the shack or in their mobile communications unit, and that is the Anderson Connector Distribution Box. And we're taking the back or the top off the box, and we're going to talk about the inside, and we're going to talk about some of the most common failures. Yeah, that's right. Anderson Connectors can fail. And we'll show you how it happens. So, Victor, if you don't mind, let's go ahead and roll the short shots. Well, this past weekend, I was working with the U.S. Coast Guard and the auxiliary, and one of our marine radios would come on and then go off and come on and go off. We traced it all the way to the Anderson multi-connector distribution box, and everything looked okay, but as soon as we wiggled the lead, it went off. Bad Anderson solder connection? Well, we'll show you. And the other day, we were working with a Santa Ana emergency group, and they, too, had an Anderson problem. And what we found out was that one of the blades did not get seated. And for those of you that work with Anderson, be sure and always use the correct tool if you're not going to solder but swedge them. And that way, you'll have a good, sure fit. Remember, on Anderson's, when you're looking at them on the rear, red is on the right and the blade is down. Red, right, rear, blade is down. And make sure that they're well seated. Some folks will actually put the little pin in there. I don't like it. One time I had the pin short out one of my Anderson box when it dropped out. So I go ahead and just put a little bit of super glue, and then they are wedged there forever. And you can also buy them where they're already fused together. Those are the Anderson. I think those are the 30 amp. We see at the ham shows a lot of Anderson connection distribution boxes. And my favorite are those that give me the most for most bang for the buck. The ham source as well as West Mountain Radio. These are the two ham source ones. Very well put together, and they do a great job. Plus, they give you a readout as to what's going on inside the Anderson connector. Well, we've all seen the Anderson connectors. They have the receiving pins, red on top usually, and you just plug right in, and away you go. All of these distribution boxes have a fuse, and the fuses are well marked. Other types of distribution boxes really minimize any voltage drop where you're nearly plugging them into each other. That's a lot of Andersons. I sure hope there's a big power supply running them. But a little fuse, a non-fuse device like this works well. Well, when we go to look at many Anderson distribution boxes in the field for the ARES organizations, every so often we see some with missing. huh, look at those two top ports. There, something's missing. Well, when we take a look at others, we find that the plastic is fractured. And these are relatively new, but the plastic was brittle. So I encourage all of you, get out the DX Engineering catalog and work with DX Engineering, because they, too, are very aware of inexpensive Anderson distribution boxes versus the good ones that they handle and the good ones that we see out at many different ham fests. But anytime you see things like this, you can pretty well expect problems. Now, here's a big problem. Notice the one on the right. Well, they've got red connected, but the black actually fell out. Yet the radio worked, and on transmit, the radio dimmed down a little bit because it was getting its ground battery negative return off of the antenna circuit, not right here at the Anderson box. So what the heck? What are these little holes that we're seeing in some of the inexpensive Anderson connector boxes? And look at that black one. It literally got toasted when it was making an intermittent connection. So make sure that you don't have any intermittent Andersons. Well, when you plug into your Anderson distribution box, you push down hard, and many times that's going to take those two pins on what was installed in the box, and those pins are going to begin to wiggle loose on their soldered connection to the board. Well, looking at this particular distribution box, there's not much solder I see on this side or on the reverse side on the Anderson connectors. And this is where we're beginning to see the problems. And that is when they put them together, the soldered connection did not get to the front. And what they are, believe it or not, are just pieces of wire that have been pushed into and crimped to one end of the Anderson. And then the other ones, the little two pieces of wire, what connect there for the top end, and the little pieces of wire, what plug right into this area. Now, you see those two holes right there in the middle of the screen? Well, that's where they were supposed to be soldered. And I imagine when they left the factory, they were soldered. But they were probably soldered with a less than 50-watt soldering iron, because as I wiggle the top connection, it wiggles right there and you can see it well. And on this particular Anderson distribution box, they left plenty of wire sticking out. So it's real easy to wiggle the connectors on the top side and then see them wiggle on the bottom side. And they should not wiggle. Well, if you tried to solder these back together again, the extra exposed wire is going to be pretty tough to make a good solder connection. You'd really like to get solder over the tip end as well. So very cautiously, we're a pair of diagonals, and be careful when you snip those. You know it's going to take off like a rocket right into your eyeballs or forehead, so be careful. I like to snip them down real close to the board after I put the wiggly, loosey-goosey Andersons in. And once I do that, I take out my trusty soldering iron. Come on, let's get it a little bit hotter. I've got some flux on it. I've cleaned off the spot. Let's turn it up a little bit more. No, the little tiny soldering iron, like you see here, is not going to be able to effectively do the Andersons quickly. And if you don't do it quickly and just leave it sit there, you're going to melt the plastic on the other side. And then you've got a whole connector board that is not going to work. So I take out the Big Bertha, the big soldering gun. That's a 350 watt, and I can go in there real quick, put a blob of solder on there on each side. One side is positive, the other is negative. And then that Anderson connector is going to be in there nice and tight. And after I do that to all of the other ones, I look around and make sure that the distribution box is well put together. And this one, well, I don't know what the heck. They must have had a bad day on putting these together, but not a real clean job on the selector switch. But nonetheless, it was working good. This is where the fuse goes, and it used the standard automotive fuses. They just plugged right in. And on one of the units, the West Mountain Radio, they have the fuses with a LED. So if the fuse should go, the LED is going to light up, gives you a positive indication that you've blown the fuse. So here we're going to put in a new fuse, very low current, so got a little 1 ampere, and it sort of drops right in. But be careful if your Anderson box is hot. In other words, it's all turned on. If you're not careful, you'll take one of those blades and accidentally touch it to the outside of the Anderson gray area, the metallic box, and poof, either the fuse blows or there's a big spark. So be very careful. I like to put new fuses in when that distribution box is turned off. Oh, my gosh. This has happened to all of you. I know. You go to get the fuse in, it wiggles sort of up, and then it disappears. Well, you cannot be using that Anderson connection box, even with a 1 amp fuse floating around in the inside. So you got to take the back off, got to take the front off, and finally recover that fuse. So make sure it's turned off before you stick the fuse in. And here is the West Mountain Radio Rig Runner, and they've done a nice job, and these great Anderson connectors have the red LED that if the fuse goes, the LED lights up. Real handy way to see what's going on. And DX Engineering, they've got the capabilities of giving you just the right Anderson multi-connector box for what you plan to do. And again, I like the ones with that little red LED. And in the bottom right, they also have a piezoelectric sounder. All right, you kids in the chat room, you're under 30, at least maybe under 40. But for those of us over, I won't tell you how old Gordo is, it's very hard to hear that high whistle when I'm by myself. Susie says, oh, my God, you got high voltage somewhere, or low voltage. So you may want to swap out the piezoelectric to something a little more lower in audio frequency. And I'm always heartened when I see good connections like this. Looks like the West Mountain Group put a little twist in it to add further stability. Because remember, when you plug into Anderson's and unplug, you're putting a lot of pressure down, which could break that solder joint. Or when you're yanking your radio connector out of the Anderson connectors on the board, you also stand the chance of, well, I'll show you in a minute what's going to happen. But here they have it actually inspected to make sure that it's nice and clean. That's a nice looking refurbished Anderson connection setup that I did. And in our communications van, we have about 3 or 4 Anderson distribution boxes. And almost all of them from one of the manufacturers had just little intermittent problems, but we got them all soldered up. And Victor, I'll let you come over to me. And here's what a set of Andersons look like if they accidentally pull out of the Anderson connection distribution box. And as you see, and I'm looking at these carefully, there's no solder. There is absolutely no solder that I see on these connectors. So they were just like hanging in there with a sort of a wedged connection. So get out your soldering iron, if it's a good big one, or your soldering gun, and take apart your Anderson box. Expose this side here and give each one a wiggle. And if it wiggles, then it's time to take it all apart and see if it's also wiggling on the back side. And if it is, it's an easy fix, but I recommend a soldering gun. So mind your Andersons. We don't want any loosey-goosey ones. And all of you have a great Easter holiday weekend and Easter Sunday coming up. So this is Gordo, WB6NOA, Bob. Back to you.
Very good, Gordo. You always bring us good information, and especially about the Andersons. They are so useful, and a lot of people just think they go on forever, but it's just like your car. You have to maintain things once in a while, so always good information. Well, I wanted to remind you that exactly 1 year ago, about 2 weeks back, we started a very special project, and we started that project building things on pieces of wood, and it's gone crazy. really gone crazy. I've been spending a lot of time here in Belleville. I don't have any radio gear here. It's all down Pleasant Hope. And I've been listening to all the web SDR receivers. If you haven't done that, it's amazing. They're all over the globe. Of course, I hear WTWW everywhere. But I get to listen to a lot of amateur radio conversations. And I have to tell all of you that it's amazing how many people are talking about the pine board. It's really something. So we've captured the hearts of a lot of guys that are building once again. But I took it a little further. I've been working on this for a long time. Haven't said much about it. But if you remember this, that was the coil that came from MFJ. We had to cut it off. Well, I discovered that if you keep the whole thing, the entire coil, and you do this to it, you now have a transmitter that will work on 160 meters. Yes. And this has been a real fun project. I've been wanting to do it from day one, but I wasn't quite sure. So I waited until I had some time, and I've had some time here to make that happen. First of all, we mounted the switch to turn the B-plus on here. There, we'll tune it up. I think you can see that okay. The light's back in the back. And it has a band switch. And this band switch is three bands. And it's switching three crystals. The only problem is I only have one set of crystal sockets here. All the rest of them's down in Pleasant Hope. But I'm ready for it. But this is switching the coil. And that coil is working on 160 meters, guys and gals. And I'm telling you, this is quite a deal because a lot of people don't have any transmitters that work on 160. And now you do. And it's doing 5 watts AM on 160. And I've only got one of the taps done. That's this guy right here, the red guy. That's for 75. That means we're only using that much of the coil. If you remember, the coil is only that long. So what that tap is doing is telling that big coil, you guys are gone. And I need to put another one on for 40. But I want to wait till I get down to Pleasant Hope with my receivers and especially my my analyzers to make sure I get the right tap. And we'll show you some of that, how to do some of that later on when I get it all set up. But there's one other thing, and it's really cool. The other thing that I did came from Gene. You remember Gene? Gene did all of those fabulous drawings. And Gene, I told you, you got some more work to do. Well, Gene came up with a really cool design for an antenna relay. Now, you can do the normal thing, but he did a neat little thing that in the position of transmit, it grounds your receiver so you don't blow any RF into the front end of it. Here's the deal. You can't see it perhaps, but you saw where the light is back here. That's the antenna. The transmitter is, of course, already here. But this coax connector is for your receiver. And in addition, I have two terminals over, actually three, a ground and plus or minus a receiver transmit that will mute your receiver. So if my advice is to go to a Hamfest and get you an old SX99 or an old Heath kit, make sure they work. The guys will be honest with you. That would be the best thing to do is to get a working receiver, but you have to be able to mute it. All those receivers have muting on the back. There are the contacts. Take those two wires and put them on the back of the receiver where it says mute, and you're ready to go. So what we have done, we've taken the pine board. it was a project I had to take, and was amazing. I only had about 6 screws holding this whole transmitter section. I lifted that and slid this bigger board. I went over to Lowe's. I don't have any equipment here. I went over to Lowe's, and they cut me this board, which happened to be a piece of oak. It was hard to drill. And I slid this board underneath, screwed the transmitter back in, put the front panel on with an L bracket. I had an L bracket here. I couldn't believe it. You go to Lowe's and buy one. And it worked great. And look what we did. And we'll have more about this, the drawings and so on. But the transmitter is exactly the same. No change. All we did is add the bigger coil. And because of that, I had to do a bigger base. I figured, you know what, Heil? You got a lot of time. Why don't you put in Gene's antenna relay system? And why don't you put a front panel so we can have a place to mount the on and off power switch and the variable cap and the band switch? If I do that, it's now on 75, but I don't have a crystal in there. It works. I've tried it, and it works. But I need to have my other crystal sockets, and they're all down there. Everything else is the same. It works great. I'm really proud of it. And we'll be sharing a lot of that with you. But here we are a year later, and it's really unbelievable what has happened in that year. And as you well know, it became the cover story, and I got the cover award for January. So Ham Nation is it's being read and talked about all over the bands. And Web SDR has been my savior here while I'm here, not without any kind of antennas or radios. And I got to remind you, be sure you have the chipstick so that you have any problems when we shut this baby off. What I do there is I turn the power off. Take the chipstick, and I show you just so you know, because you don't want to forget this. We'll go to one of the grounds, and there's many of them, and they're all tied together. There's the ground. You want to go over here and just do that. That's right there at the top of the rectifier. It's the B plus there at the end of that. So we're good. We've pretty much eliminated it. Of course, it now has that nice 33K that's from B plus to ground, which bleeds off the B plus when you turn it off. But I don't trust it. I take my chipstick, and it's very simple to build because it's done on a Lowe's paint stick and a 33K resistor. No big deal, but be sure you do that. But I appreciate all of the cards and letters. Boy, we're just getting a ton of them in, and I appreciate it. Of course, cards and letters via email and pictures. Pictures are wonderful, so keep it up. And I have other plans, so this isn't the end of it. There's a lot more coming, and I appreciate everybody's their ideas. They're getting a lot of ideas from you about let's do this and let's build that and let's do that. Well, we're going to do some of that. So get out the soldering iron, join us all. And the nice thing is you get on the air and talk to other Pine Board people on AM. Respect the AM window, 3870 to 3890. No, you never operate single sideband there. It's a gentleman's agreement. Although there are a lot of non-gentlemen that they go there anyway, saying, oh, the heck with you guys. That's not quite fair because the AMers only have a very, very short piece in the middle of 75, and they never go outside. The sidebanders can go everywhere, but they just like to stir things up, and that's not fair. That's not the gentlemanly way of ham radio. 7290 to 7295 on 40 meters. Those are AM windows. Back in the late 50s, that was adopted by gentlemen. And I still wish it was that way, but some of them are not. But I'm sure having fun with when I get on the air with mine, I'll tell you that. So stay tuned. Lots more to come. And it's really been quite a thing this year here on Ham Nation. Don, take her away, buddy. I know that you want to build if you can find some time, right?
Yes. And look at this. By day, it's a mild-mannered Lowe's paint stick. But by night, it becomes, it's an official chipstick. The chip actually gave me a Dayton last year. I have not put the wire or the little copper, thick copper wire or the resistor on it yet. But there it is. As seen on Ham Nation chipstick. Personalized to me because it's bright in here. But anyway, trust me. It's my chipstick for crying out loud. Now, listen, the pine board is cool as it can be, but I'm thinking that, you know, building a VHF UHF HT on a pine board might be just a little bit ambitious. Well, that's where DX Engineering comes in, because as fun as it might be to try to do that, it's probably better to go ahead and get the store-bought than trying to roll your own when it comes to a VHF, UHF handheld, especially now that we're talking digital. And if you're thinking about upgrading your HT or adding one of to your transceiver collection, DX Engineering has all the latest handhelds. They put incredible radio performance right into the palm of your hand, like ICOM's ID51A Plus 2. It gives you two key D-Star functions, terminal mode and access point mode. It will deliver blazing fast data transfer in digital voice mode. It also features an integrated GPS receiver with an automatic position reply function. For added versatility, you can use the radio's dual watch feature to listen to AM, FM, and shortwave broadcast stations while simultaneously monitoring the ham bands. The 51A Plus 2 includes a new DV and FM repeater search function for comprehensive scans. And, of course, it's an analog dual band radio as well. Everything you love in the old non-digital analog dual band radios from ICOM, it's all there too, in addition to all the digital stuff. And packed with digital features, the Yaesu FT70DR 144-430 dual band is a wonderfully easy to use radio, and it's value priced. This transceiver gives you conventional analog FM operation and the advanced C4FM digital mode. The 70DR will give you up to 5 watts of reliable RF power. It's got a large front speaker with 700 milliwatts of audio output, so you're going to hear it. Very handy in noisy environments. Automatic mode select detects the operating mode of the received signal, then automatically and instantly switches the receiver to the appropriate mode. It's built to commercial-grade standards, including the IP54 rating for dust and water. Makes this radio suitable for operation in the harshest environments. You want just a budget-friendly, durable, and rugged radio, Elenco's DJ500T. This is a great 2-meter, 70-centimeter analog radio for field operation. 5 watts of power, 200 memory channels, a large dot matrix display that's easy to read. Even at a quick glance, you can receive in semi-duplex dual band, VHF, VHF, and UHF, UHF. Wide and narrow FM transmit and receive helps cut down on RFI and crowded RF environments, and you get access to Elenco's free programming software. And, of course, we can't forget Kenwood with built-in APRS data communications capability, the THD-74A from Kenwood. This is another dual-bander, VHF, UHF. Actually, it's a tri-bander. Gives you great options for backpackers, campers, and bikers. So, impressive transmit on 2 meters, 1.25 meters, which is 220, and 70 centimeters. And even better yet, the Kenwood works great on both D-Star and APRS simultaneously at the same time. Can even be set up to receive automatic position and weather information. I am a professional pronunciator, you know. Can't tell it tonight, but the radio has a true multiband, multimode operation, dual frequency reception, and it's all there. So no matter what you choose, DX Engineering has it, and DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern tonight, and if it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products and expert advice, DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Request your catalog. Shop online 24/7, 365 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. dxengineering.com/hamnation. And we thank them so much for their support of Ham Nation. Why don't we get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline, and we'll hear from Dr. T. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2108, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, March 28, 2018. As tornadoes swept through Alabama Monday, March 19th, hams across North and East Alabama assisted the National Weather Service offices in Huntsville and Birmingham.
Amateur radio operators and members of the North Alabama and Southern Middle Tennessee Skywarn Group linked up multiple repeaters to cover that entire region and assisted the Huntsville NWS office with reports on multiple tornadoes that struck North Alabama. Also, amateur radio operators in East Alabama on the WB4GNA repeater atop Mount Cheehaw, the tallest peak in the state, assisted not only with passing storm reports, but also with volunteer efforts in the wake of a major tornado that struck the city of Jacksonville, Alabama, as well as other portions of East Alabama late Monday night. As of last report, volunteers were headed to Jacksonville from as far away as Anniston, Oxford, and Birmingham, Alabama, to assist in rescue efforts. All in all, though, considering the fact that the Storm Prediction Center had much of Alabama under a marginal risk for severe weather, things could have been much worse. For Amateur Radio Newsline, reporting from Jacksonville, Alabama, I'm Bobby Best, WX4ALA.
Volunteerism has always been a hallmark of amateur radio. Here's another opportunity for hams to be helpful.
What are you doing May 17th through May 20th? If Hamvention is included in any of your plans for those days, you may want to think about helping out the AMSAT Hamvention team, which is looking for help in setting up or staffing the AMSAT booth during the event at the Greene County Fairground and Expo Center in Xenia, Ohio. If you aren't sure how to assist at the booth when visitors stop by, AMSAT has plenty of Elmers to train you. And if you just want to help with setup or teardown, that's okay too. Contact Phil Smith, W1EME, if you're interested in being part of the AMSAT presence in Ohio this year. Email him at W1EME@AMSAT.org. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB.
Any ham radio operator can appreciate the power of code, even if they themselves have never touched a straight key. One exhibit in the UK has taken the appeal of code several steps further.
A new exhibit at Bletchley Park doesn't just show an important part of World War II history, the way it happened. The exhibit has been established on the very site where that history took place. Stepping inside the Bletchley Park building known as Hut 11A, visitors will be able to learn the story of the bomb machine located there to help Allied intelligence crack the mysteries of the Enigma code and decrypt Nazi messages during the Second World War. The now historic team behind that effort comprised Alan Turing, Gordon Welshman, and several others. The exhibit invites museum visitors to, quote, discover the truth and stand where they stood, end quote. The exhibit is permanent, and so hopefully there will be plenty of time to do just that. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Bucci, 4NJH.
And another reminder that the 2018 nominating period for the Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is open. You'll find full information and the nominating form on our website, www.arnewsline.org. Just look at the top under the YHOTY tab. And for the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Bobby Best, WX4ALA, Stephen Kinford, N8WB, Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We have a spotless sun with only a remnant coronal hole that's bringing us a little bit of activity. But there's a new region rotating into view. Is it a game changer? Those stories and more in the news this week. Space weather this week has been reasonably quiet. We've been dealing with some pockets of fast wind from a remnant coronal hole that's brought us a little bit of activity here and there, but it's been pretty sporadic. But for now, that region has been moving through and things are quieting down and quieting down. Now, the real story this week is the new active region that's rotating into Earth view off the sun's east limb. It's been building on the backside and growing quite rapidly, even firing off a few low-level flares. So this is good news for you amateur radio operators and emergency responders because it's going to boost the solar flux here in the next couple days and possibly move the radio propagation conditions from poor back to marginal. So this is very good news. And as it rotates in, it's going to be followed by a coronal hole that will bring us some decent activity here, maybe another solar storm, possibly within the next 10 days. Switching to our M-Flare threat meter, you can see we are very low when it comes to X-ray flux, and therefore the solar flux by proxy is also extremely low. We're well below the B floor here, but you can see a little bit of ramping up recently in the last day or so. That is from that new region that's rotating into Earth view. You can even see a few small peaks from flaring. So this region is the one that we're excited about that's going to boost solar flux and bump the radio propagation back up into marginal conditions for you amateur radio operators and emergency responders. And the nice thing is that you should have an improved solar flux and improved radio propagation possibly over the next 2 weeks. Switching to your solar storm conditions, you can see that remnant of a corona hole that gave us some pockets of fast wind. It bumped us up to active conditions in four separate times during this past week, but just as we predicted, it really wasn't sustained. Nonetheless, it brought us some gorgeous aurora at high latitudes and even a peak of aurora a little bit further south if you were on your toes and knew where to look. Meanwhile, things are beginning to settle down now and settle down, and it will continue to be this quiet easily for the next week. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are kind of coming down the last bit of that remnant coronal hole. That is now rotating through the Earth strike zone, so we're expecting maybe a little bit more activity, but not too much. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting active conditions with maybe a 30 to 40% chance of a moderate level storm, but it's not going to last all that long. At mid latitudes, we're expecting only unsettled conditions, maybe up to active conditions for a short bit, but only about a 15% chance of a minor storm. Probably won't get there. Like I said, things are beginning to calm down. And as the week unfolds, things will continue to get quieter and quieter. And then we'll have some quiet times until about the next 2 weeks when that new coronal hole rotates into the Earth strike zone. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, we've been dealing with a spotless sun, but we do have that new region that is rotating into Earth view, and as it rotates further, we'll get a better look at it to see if it happens to be an M-flare player. But right now, the risk for big flares is in the green. We have no risk for radio blackouts, so that's some good news. The other bit of good news is that we do have a boost in the solar flux that is expected later this week, which could bump us back up into the marginal radio propagation conditions for you amateur radio operators and emergency responders. And as long as this region doesn't plan to act like a submarine and dive back underneath the sun's surface, you guys could enjoy some decent propagation over the next 2 weeks. So the space weather this week is calming down when it comes to solar storms, but it's actually picking up when it comes to radio propagation. That new region that's rotating into Earth view, that's good news for you amateur radio operators and emergency responders, because it should bump up that solar flux and radio propagation back into the marginal conditions. And as long as that region stays active, you could enjoy some decent radio propagation over the next couple weeks. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
All right. Good stuff, Dr. T. Thank you so much for that. Now, listen, if you don't follow her on Twitter, you really should. It's at Tamitha Scove. It's all one word, T-A-M-I-T-H-A-S-K-O-V. It's not Tabitha, and it's not Tamika. It's Tamitha, at Tamitha Scove. She's a fine Irish lass, she is. So by all means, go on Twitter and follow her and find out everything you need to know. She posts all the time, constant updates. So good stuff. We'll check in and see what's going on just a couple of hours to my north in the Jackson, Mississippi area right after this word from ICOM.
Advanced technology for advanced communications. Communicating has never been more fun than with ICOM. From D-Star to SDR, ICOM uses the most advanced technology in their radios. The SDR you've been asking for is here. ICOM's new IC7610 is a high-performance RMDR with the ability to pick out the faintest signals even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling system, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. Whether you're looking to enter the world of D-Star or need a backup D-Star portable for your Go kit, the ID31A Plus is the perfect radio. Easy to operate, the ID31A Plus is available in silver, red, or gold. Worldwide communications, share pictures and text messages, and it's IPX waterproof, compact, lightweight, and tough. Find out more about all the great new ICOM radios. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur today.
And you can tune in and enter to win. Learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for March, that new radio is going to be the ICOM ID 51A Plus 2 VHF UHF D-Star Portable, extended D-Star coverage, terminal mode, access point mode. You can send and receive pictures and text messages. A lot of different options with the Android app, the RSMS-1A, and there's also a map application, and you can select local repeaters and other sites with DPRS stations or using that map app. View and export the received transceiver history, get detailed data on the transceiver's repeater list, and a lot more. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And I don't know if you can hear that rain that just hit the studios here. You probably can't hear the tornado siren either. It's gone off now, but the little red box, yeah, the little red box right there, that's where I am. So we'll have a good view of all the action right here. Anyway, enough of that. Let's get back to where we left off. I've got some more fun with the tuner project tonight. Let's take a look at that, and maybe when we come back, the rain will have slacked off enough that I can actually hear myself think.
For the last couple of weeks on Smoke and Solder, we've been building the MFJ941EK HF antenna tuner kit. This week, we're going to do the final testing and calibration. So there's a few items we're going to need: a 100-watt radio with an adjustable RF output, an accurate watt meter, and they suggest a bird with a 100H slug. I don't have a bird, wish I did, but what I do have is the MFJ Deluxe True Peak Reading SWR watt meter, which we'll use this as our reference standard. A porcelain or plastic light socket with a pigtail attached, and a 40-watt incandescent appliance bulb. What I've got is a 40-watt clamp-on light here with a reveal bulb in it, so we'll hope that'll work out. We need an insulated straight-blade tuning tool to set the trim pots and trim cap in here, and I've got a little tweaker here. And we're going to need some PL259 patch cables, 3 foot or shorter, and I've got those here. And we'll need a volt ohmmeter, and I've got that as well. The first thing we should do is check for loose hardware and tighten any connections as needed, and inspect the turns on the coils here to make sure none of them are shorted, as well as the two capacitors here. I have already done all that, and everything looked good there. We confirm that both our meters are resting on zero, and they are, and we confirm that all the knob pointers are in the correct positions, and they are, and check to be sure that the push button switches do actually push on and off. The first test here is the meter lamp test. That's simple enough. We take the supplied cable here, hook it to 12 volts, plug it into the power connector on the rear of the unit, and be certain that the meter light does come on when we turn it on. Now the next test involves checking out the RF switching here in the bypass mode. I'll use the old Simpson 260 here for this test. We're going to put it on R times 1. First, I'm going to connect to the transmit lead. That's that one right there. I could connect it in the back. I'm just going to use an alligator clip. And we want to check it to the dummy load. So I'll turn the switch all the way over to dummy load. I'll touch the meter here to the dummy load connector, and we got continuity there and in none of the other positions. The next one we'll check is the balanced line wire. So we'll put it on the terminal down here marked wire, and we have continuity there when we flip it to that position. The next ones we'll check are coax 1 and coax 2. Coax 1, when we're in that position, we've got continuity. We'll move on to coax 2. And we have continuity in the coax 2 position, so our switching is working okay.
Now we'll want to check the tuned side of the switch here. What we'll do is connect to the stator here on the antenna capacitor. The stator is this side right here, the one that does not move. And there, on dummy load, we have continuity and nowhere else. So we'll check the balanced wire, and we have continuity only in that position. We'll check coax 1 and coax 2. There's coax 1. And coax 2 is good, too. So all our switching is working right, both in the tuned and in the bypass modes there. We'll want to check our balun here that's used for balanced lines. That's simple enough to do. Basically, all we do is measure across the two terminals for the balanced line, and we've got continuity there. Now we'll move on to the power meter calibration. We want to be sure that we do not turn the antenna selector switch or the inductor switch while power is applied to the tuner here, because you could damage something. And that's a rule that should be observed anytime you're using this tuner. We'll need to connect this gear in the method shown here, the transmitter into the tuner, from the tuner to our external watt meter, and then on to the dummy load. So I'm going to connect the meter here to coax 1, and I'll connect my transceiver here to the transmitter input. Now, this meter requires power to work. That's because there's an active circuit in there for true peak reading. So I'll hook my 12 volts up to the meter here so that it's functional. Now, we shouldn't place our hands near any of the components in here while we've got the transmitter energized, because you could get a nasty little burn. And the first thing we'll do is set the forward power setup and bridge null. So we'll tune our radio to 14.200 and select the CW mode. And we'll set the antenna selector switch here on bypass to coax 1. We'll set our meter here to 300 watts. And we should apply 100 watts power into the tuner now. Here's 100 watts being applied to the unit. We're showing 100 back here on our reference meter. We're way over that up here on the tuner meter. So what we need to do is turn down R8 here to bring that into range and set it at 100 watts. No matter how I turn R8 here, I cannot get it down to where it reads 100 watts. The next step says to watch the reflected power meter and adjust the trimmer capacitor back here for a null reading. And that's going to have some effect on the power readings, too. And I would call that null right there. You notice that the power reading did come down. So now we'll set it for 100 watts. And we want to be careful when we're doing this that we don't leave our rig keyed up too long. They're not made for continuous duty like that. So kind of take it easy on the rig. So we've got the first setting done there, and we've nulled out the capacitor as well. Now we need to reduce the power of the transmitter down to 20 watts. We'll change our range switch here to the 30 watt scale, and it's pegged out as well. So we'll adjust R7 until we've got a 20 watt reading. And we're not able to get it down to 20 watts. Now, I was looking at it wrong. We don't set it for 20 watts down here. When we've got the button in here, we're reading off the top scale, so 200 up here would actually be 20 watts right there. And now the reflected power calibration. I don't have any dummy loads that I know have certain amounts of reflected power to check this with. Fortunately, MFJ has come up with a real clever way to do this. What we'll do is just reverse our cables. That's right. We'll connect the antenna to the transmit lead, and we'll connect the transmit to the coax 1 lead. Shazam. So this time we go to the 300 watt position, which is in, and we apply 20 watts. I'm showing 20 watts there on my reference meter. And we'll adjust R6 to where we're showing 20 watts of reflected power here. That'll be the scale going this way. And that's 20 watts right there. Now we'll reduce the power to 5 watts. That's as low as I can go, and the reference meter back here is showing about 7 watts. So we'll match that. We've got to come back out to the 30 watt position and adjust R5 here to set this to 7 watts. So now our meter should be calibrated. Now we'll check out the T-network. We've got our antenna and our meter and load hooked back up correctly. We'll set our range switch to 300, which is in. We'll turn our antenna selector here to the tune side to coax 1 so that our tuner is in circuit. We'll set our inductor switch to J. And we'll set both our capacitors, the transmitter and the antenna here, to 0. And now we'll begin applying power very low and gradually increase it up to 100 watts. We can verify if this is working by adjusting either of these capacitors. We should see the reflected power go up. Actually, we're not seeing much change in the reflected power there on the reference meter. And that's because of where it's located in the circuit. Let's try the same thing with the antenna tuning capacitor now. And we've got the same result. Reflected power is changing. So we know that worked. Now let's change the inductor. We'll unkey the rig because we don't want to turn the inductor while the rig is keyed up. We can see when we rekey that we have a higher reflected power now. So that tells us that the T-network is working. Now we have one final test here, and that is the balance line check. And that's where we need our 40-watt incandescent bulb. To do this, the first thing we need to do is connect a jumper from the wire terminal up to the balance line terminal right above it. There's our jumper. And now we'll connect the light bulb across the two balance line terminals here. As we start applying power, we see the light bulb starting to light up. Let's try to reduce the reflected power here. Now, I'll turn off the power and we'll try the inductor in a different position. There we go. We can get it down to about 0. All tested and tuned up and ready to go. All we need to do now is put the cover on top. So there we have it. The MFJ941EK VersaTuner 2 Antenna Tuner Kit. It went together real easy and looks to be made out of decent components. So I would say for the price, you can't go wrong with this.
And that was a lot of fun. I had forgotten about using the light bulb there on the balanced line connections to actually do some adjusting with there. But you can see it works. you know, it's hard to know what the impedance of a light bulb would be because it is going to change as the wattage increases and the filaments get hotter in there. But, hey, that's the way they say to do it. So that's what we did, and it worked out great. But, you know, last week I asked a question that, just happened to come out of Gordo's Extra Class Amateur Radio Study Guide here. And that was, if a frequency counter with a specified accuracy, that's not what I asked last week. That's what I'm going to ask this week out of this transparent book. Let's read it. Let's read what will be next week's question. If a frequency counter with a specified accuracy of plus or minus 1 parts per million or 1 ppm reads 146,562,000 hertz, what is the most the actual frequency being measured could differ from the reading? If it reads 146,520,000 and the accuracy is plus or minus 1 ppm, what's the highest that it could possibly read? Is it 165.2 hertz? Is it 146.52 hertz? Is it 14.652 kilohertz? Is it 1.4652 megahertz? You think you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win something nice here. Well, there goes the weather alert again. I guess maybe we got another tornado. DX Engineering Sport Bag, a great bag to carry your swag in or your gear in or whatever. I use this all the time going to Hamfest, traveling around. Really works out great. A heavy-duty bag, multiple compact compartments in it. Great bag there. So answer that question for me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Now, last week's question, and we were, of course, talking about the tuner, and I wanted to know, how can you adjust an antenna tuner without transmitting? Well, Larry Carbog, N7LUF, knew. He said, you tune for maximum noise. And that's right. That's how you do it, Larry. So congratulations. We're going to be sending you this MFJ-113 giant LED clock. It's an alarm clock. It also has got a switch on it. Allows you to display in either 12 or 24-hour format. Just use whichever you like. Great clock for the shack. You can see it across the room. It's so big. So answer that question for me that I asked a moment ago. And who knows? Maybe you'll win that DX Engineering sport bag next week. And now it is time for that portion of the show where we get one of the better looking hosts to come in here and help us salvage everything.
One of?
Wait. Wow. I'm blushing. Thank you. Yes. Wow, I don't even know where to go with that. Thanks, George. And how, George, just a quick question. How did you make the clock not transparent, but the book was?
Well, the clock is not green.
Oh, okay. It's a green book. However, got it now.
Yeah, the book is green. Now, you can't see me. It's magic, Amanda. That's all I can really say.
I'm blown away. Wow. It doesn't take much to amuse me, evidently. Thank you, George. All right.
You're welcome.
No laughter, Don. No laughter. Okay. First question.
I can't promise that.
Gordo, this one is for you. Have you ever tried crimp connectors for any of your ham activities for your antenna connectors? While they seem to work for VHF and UHF, would they work for HF?
Okay. And what type of connectors? Did you say crimp connectors? Over.
Crimp. Roger, roger. Crimp.
Yes, I use crimp connectors. I get them from DX Engineering. And with the right crimping tool, they'll work fine on HF. In fact, on HF, you can get away with a lot more of very low loss because on HF, everything is sort of low loss. But once you get up to VHF and UHF, that's when I switch over to always soldered connectors.
Okay, and I'm kind of curious, George, what's your opinion about this? Sometimes I've heard people kind of cringe at the word crimp connectors.
Depends on the quality of the connector. There are some that are good. I still like to solder the center pin of a connector. You know, there were some at one point that the tip of the connector just got down real small and you were supposed to push the center conductor up on it and then crimp it. I do not like those kind. If you can solder the center pin, I'm talking about on PL259 now. If you can solder the center pin and put a crimp ring around the shield on it, I think those work just fine. For B and C connectors, though, I almost always go with crimp connectors on that. Those are very difficult to assemble yourself. So type in connectors. Yeah, I would say either way on them. But, yeah, I will use a crimp, but it's got to be a good crimp.
I think crimp connectors got a bad name in the Radio Shack days because they sold some really low-quality crimp-on connectors back you know, in the 70s when I was fooling with CD radio. Man, they sold some horrible crimp-on connectors, and that's where crimp-on connectors got a bad name. But you get the good ones, like I said, from DX Engineering, and those things are killer.
Right. Yeah,
we have a guest.
They sold some. That's Radio Shack sold some horrible solder connectors, yeah, too.
Yes, they did.
So that's
oh,
huge. Wow.
We had to introduce dinner. One of our girls. Don, no.
It'd take about 15 or 20 of those to make a real good meal. How many you got, Jeff?
We ordered 18, but we lost two, so right now we have 16. But they're thriving. They're so cute to go out and watch So I was crazy chicken lady last week, and I had to introduce at least one of them. Unnamed so far. All right, Gordo, cute. This next question is also for you. And Joe is passionate about this because I think, I don't know how her relation is to him, but he's got a second grader that's getting ready to test for her technician license. Him or her, actually. That name could go either way. I apologize. Anyhow, he says, can you ask the guys for an easy way to explain some of the technical stuff on getting your ticket to a second grader? And Gordo, you are our resident teacher here, so you tell us, how do you address some of those topics?
You know, I'm all for getting kids into ham radio. And for a second grader, they're probably going to do a lot more memorization of the question pool. So I recommend absolutely shower them with stuff. If we're talking about a PL-259, show them a PL-259 or an SO-239, show them one. But that's what kids need, more show and tell than just words. Second grade, I sure hope they get on the air, but at least they have an introduction to all the fun that ham radio is about. I would first start them out, though, with a pair of FRS walkie-talkies. If they show an interest in using the walkie-talkies up and down the block, and they're going to be a good ham. But if they could care less about the walkie-talkies, you may want to wait until they become older before we introduce them to ham radio.
Yeah.
I agree.
When I was young, my favorite part of elementary school, when I'm talking second, third, fourth grade, whatever, was show and tell. You cannot go wrong with putting something in their hands to give them a tangible idea of what it is you're talking about, to turn all that theory and stuff on the page into something they can actually hold and experience. Nothing beats show and tell. I did that with Tyler. I absolutely did. I found stuff when I was teaching Tyler the tech stuff. I would look around here, you know, before we did our little classroom section at the kitchen table, and if I could find something that would illustrate it, I brought it out. And it aggravated the heck out of him. It's like, Dad, I know this. It's show and tell, son. It'll stick. And it did. He passed on the first try. Show and tell works.
It does. I agree. And I could have used a whole lot more of it studying for the test, honestly. I have something to tell you guys. I didn't know what an HT was even after I had taken the test, because I was always told it was called a walkie-talkie, not a handy-talkie. And I, you know, that's an embarrassing fact. Show and tell. I won't show the brand, but show this to me and tell me that's what you call an HT. That helps quite a bit. You have no idea.
And explain what HT stands for. Handheld transceiver. That's what HT stands for. Exactly.
You have to test on what PTT stands for, but you know, HT not so much. And so all these people are like, "Whoa, which HT you on?" I don't know what an HT is. Sorry.
This is a hobby full of acronyms, and it's, a lot of it is not intuitive. It's got to be learned. Yeah.
Right, especially the Q codes.
Yeah.
All right. One other announcement we have here. Bobby Pro, who's a user in the chat room, he's not licensed yet, neither is his grandson, but they had read that Valerie had won Ham of the Year, and they are so proud of her and so happy to be watching her on the show. So, Bobby Pro, thanks for being in the chat room with us. Thanks for watching the show, and we appreciate it. And I know Valerie would really appreciate hearing that. So, all right, that's all I have. I know we're kind of on time. So I'll just wrap this up with some of our nets for tonight. We have 71.92 for the 40-meter net, and Steve's been out of town, so, and hopefully he can do another 75-meter net before the season changes and we can no longer hear 75 very well or endure it. Let's put it that way. Let's go over some of the digital nets. We have the TAC 311 on DMR. We have 14 Charlie on D-Star. And of course, we cannot forget Dewdrop In for Echo Link. Who's wrapping the show up tonight, guys?
I don't know. George, you want to wrestle for it?
I don't know, Don. You can take it. I do want to say one thing before I go, though. You were talking about handy talkies. It just reminded me of something from back, I guess it was the mid-80s. I was working for a television station in Florida. And, you know, video gear was pretty expensive back then. We had an Ikigami camera. that was used by the portable production crew for shooting commercials and stuff. It was a little more expensive than what you'd send out with the news crews. This is like a $70,000 camera.
Oh, wow.
I was having to do some work on it. I was looking at the manual. You know what it said on the front of it? Sort of a catchphrase for it. Handy looky.
That's funny.
What?
Handy looky. That's funny. That's hilarious. You know, the first time I heard the term HT, it was on a TV show. And it was Emergency. Do you remember the Emergency? Jack Webb series. Jack Webb was the producer. Jack Webb's Emergency and Dragnet and all that stuff was so realistic. They used the term HT for those handheld Motorola radios that the firemen were carrying around. That's the first time I heard the term HT. So there you go. All right. Well, I guess we're going to wrap it up, put a bow on it. Gordon, you got anything else to add?
No. Everybody have a very great, happy Easter this Sunday and have a great weekend. And George, be looking around because I think that storm is getting closer, George.
Yeah. Watch for a lady's name, Dorothy.
Yeah, it has passed by now. It's gone from here.
And your little dog, too.
Oh, boy.
I know. Hey, I want to do a quick update on Tyler and the robotics thing. They won the Bayou Regional in New Orleans.
Whoa.
They
went
undefeated. Woo-hoo. They are going to the finals, the championship rounds in Houston in a couple of weeks. So I'll try to have video links. They keep changing where the video links are every week, it seems like. So I'll try to have that for you. But just search First Robotics online, and you'll find it, I'm pretty sure. So proud of him and Team Chaos 1421. So very, very good stuff. All right. So I guess that'll do it for us tonight. So for Bob, who had to leave earlier tonight, and the rest of the usual suspects, we'll say good night, everybody, 7-3, and thank you so much for being part of what we do here. And thanks, Leo and the Twit Network and all of our sponsors and everybody else. And, of course, you for bringing Ham Nation into your home, wherever you are. Appreciate y'all. 7-3. Good night, everybody, and happy Easter from all of us here at Ham Nation.
Happy Easter, everyone.